We know Kiwi are happy to live in commercial forests, and we know that of New Zealand's landmass, I think it's something like 7% of that landmass is covered in commercial forests of some description. The last figure I'd seen was around 1.8 million hectares of commercial forests, so that puts it into perspective a bit more. So if you can put those two facts together, that Kiwi like living in pine forests or commercial forests, and there's 1.8 million hectares of pine forest, it sort of opens up quite a large untapped habitat that we could be utilising for Kiwi in some way. You know, even if we tap into a smaller portion of that, it increases the area of Kiwi habitat throughout New Zealand quite significantly.
Hello, kia ora. I'm Anna.
And I'm Callum from Conservation Amplified.
And you're listening to the People Helping Nature podcast.
Our mission is to make conservation mainstream, one topic at a time.
Today we're so thrilled to be joined by Craig Balsam, forestry specialist at Save the Kiwi. Welcome, Craig. Would you like to introduce yourself and your role?
Kia ora. I'd just like to start with a quick karakia. Tukua te wairua ki rere ki ngā taumata. Hei ārahi a tātou mahi. Me tā tātou whai ngā tikanga a rātou mā. Kia mau kia ita, kia kore ai ngāro, kia pūpiri, kia whakamaua, kia tina, hui e, tai ki e. Tēnā koutou. Ko Manga Tāwhiri te maunga, ko te whanganui a hei te moana, ko te arawa te waka, ko Ngāti hei te iwi, ko te rā mātiti te marae, ko Heaton Balsam, raua Pariraukaua Balsam, ko Mātua, ko Craig Balsam aho. Kia ora. I'm Craig Balsam, obviously. I am here today as the forestry specialist for Save the Kiwi.
Welcome again. To kick us off, would you just quickly want to share your favourite Kiwi fact with us?
When I first joined Save the Kiwi, I knew nothing about Kiwi pretty much, so it was a pretty steep learning curve. But a couple of the facts that blew me away is that there is actually 5 different species of kiwi, not just 1 species of kiwi. And then the other fact that's quite sobering is that only 5% of kiwi chicks that are born in the wild without predator control or any sort of management from humans survive to adulthood. So 95% of kiwi chicks born in the wild die for various reasons. So that's a pretty sobering fact.
It's pretty crazy, but it's also great that we're doing this work to increase that survival rate. One of the really interesting developments in recent years is kiwi venturing into pine forests. When did we first discover that kiwi called pine forests home?
So it's hard to put an exact date on it, but I think in the late 70s and early 80s, researchers and conservationists were starting to realise that kiwi were living in pine forests and were finding it to be, you know, good habitat, and obviously they can adapt to living there, especially if there's predator control in place.
Do we have an estimate or guesstimate how many kiwi live in pine?
Kiwi are very secretive by nature, I guess. They hide during the day and they move around at night. Because of this, I guess it's hard to count individual kiwi in pine forests. In general terms, we sort of know where they're absent and where they're present. One of the things we're doing with the help of the Forest Owners Association and their members and through Save the Kiwi, we're building a map on our GSI portal that shows forest owners' estates and how kiwi numbers correlate and where they've got kiwi and where they haven't got kiwis. As opposed to having exact numbers, we're starting to get a fair idea of where they are living in pine forests, I guess is probably a better way of looking at it.
Yeah, right. So it's a bit of a work in progress, would you say?
Definitely, yeah. There's lots of ways, obviously, that you can attempt to count kiwi numbers, but it's not always about numbers. I guess it's more about whether they're actually there or not and putting the means in to protect them so that they can grow.
And so looking at the situation with kiwi in forestry, as you said, we started discovering this was a thing in the 70s, 80s, roughly. It's evolved to today where Save the Kiwi resources a role for you to look after this. Forestry owners are actively involved and it sounds like that's growing. How has the situation evolved to today and what does it look like these days with kiwi? Kiwi and pine.
We know kiwi are happy to live in commercial forests, and we know that of New Zealand's landmass, I think it's something like 7% of that landmass is covered in commercial forests of some description. That doesn't sound like a lot, but the last figure I'd seen was around 1.8 million hectares of commercial forests, so that puts it into perspective a bit more. So if you can put those two facts together, that kiwi like living in pine forests or commercial forests, and there's 1.8 million hectares of pine forest, it sort of opens up quite a large untapped habitat that we could be utilising for kiwi in some way. You know, even if we tap into a small portion of that, it increases the area of kiwi habitat throughout New Zealand quite significantly. There's some commercial forest owners who are already doing a great job with managing the kiwi and other species that they have in their forests and protecting them with predator control and all those sorts of things. There's work out there being done, but as with lots of things, you know, there's still a lot of untapped resources that we would like to possibly utilise if we could.
I'm just wondering, because they chose to move into forestry, are there any benefits to kiwi living in pine over native habitat?
I guess just to clarify that a little bit, I suppose, it's not so much that they choose to live in pine over native forests. In my experience in the Hauraki Coromandel region where I live and worked, I'd spent 30 years in the forestry industry. So I've spent a lot of time working in forests before I became involved with kiwi. But in the forests that I've worked in, both in the industry and then since taking on this role with Save the Kiwi, the thing to note is that where kiwi are present in pine forests, a lot of those forests have large tracts of native forest running through them as well. And quite often they're riparian strips that have been left when the forests were planted and things like that. So it's not so much that kiwi choose pine plantations over native, it's just that they are happy to extend their range into pine plantations. It gives the kiwi a much more diverse range, I guess, and a much more diverse habitat. Especially juvenile kiwi will wander looking for a mate or looking for food.
So the logging industry, as I understand it, has responded very positively to having kiwi in the forest. What changes have been made in the sector to protect our taonga species?
There's been lots of measures put in place over the years. One of the prerequisites, if you're sort of in a known kiwi area now, is that you need to establish presence and absence as one of the first steps when you start planning a harvest. So finding out whether there are actually kiwi present living in the block that you're about to harvest or nearby. So, I mean, that's done by various different methods. Generally, it could be placing ARDs or acoustic recording devices out in the area just to see if there are kiwi about. So those are left out for up to 10 days and they will record during the night, record any calls, and that data is then examined to see if there's kiwi calls on it, basically. The other way is having a human listening survey. We send people out at night for a few hours, usually just after dusk. They spend a couple of hours listening and seeing if they can hear kiwi calls for a few nights in a row. So yeah, just establishing basically whether there's kiwi in the block or not is the first thing. One of the other big things too is a lot of forests are now either implementing their own predator control regimes or they're working in conjunction and helping local kiwi projects, for example, to do that predator control themselves and assisting them to do that. Last year, we've just updated the management guidelines for managing North Island brown kiwi in plantation forests. That hadn't been updated since the early 80s, I think. So that's a resource that is a guideline for forest managers and owners and gives them lots of advice and tips and processes and context that they can use to manage kiwi within their blocks. Like, say, they've got a bit of a guide to go on. Save the Kiwi and a lot of the kiwi projects around the country will do like kiwi training with harvest crews before they go and start harvesting blocks. So we will run a training session with them, teach them how to identify kiwi sign, basically, so they know if they're a kiwi about while they're working, all those sorts of things. But yeah, lots of little things like that. A lot of it is just education and awareness for the harvest crews and the forest managers, so they know how to recognise there's kiwi there for a start, and then how to deal with the situation with certain situations. So another good thing that a lot of forest owners are doing is they're really supportive of good dog management practices. Like dogs are really big threat to all kiwi. So one of the things that comes hand in hand with a lot of forests is they're utilized as hunting areas for pig hunters or deer hunters who often, well, pig hunters always use dogs. Deer hunters, it's getting more popular to use dogs to detect deer now. So a lot of the forest owners now will stipulate that anyone hunting in their forests to get a permit needs to have their dogs kiwi avoidance trained. It works really well for hunting and working dogs who, like basically dogs with a job who are used to having boundaries and are used to having commands and that. It doesn't work so well for pet dogs. But yeah, just forest owners putting in good dog management guidelines as well for their forests is a big help and something that's becoming more common now.
I just want to make a side note on that around the dog topic and Kiwi avoidance training. In a previous podcast episode with Emma Craig, who's also from your team, we went into detail about this. So if you're listening to this episode right now and you're thinking, I'd like to know more about that, tune into that past episode and you can learn all the details and then get your dog trained if it needs to be trained. But I'm really fascinated by the actions and the approach that forestry is taking to care for Aotearoa Kiwi. It's clear that it's quite diverse. There's a wide range of things we're doing. But one thing that always sparks my mind is, what about harvest time?
So the first thing, obviously, is we establish presence or absence. So we find out if there are ex-Kiwi in the block. And it's a lot more of what we talked about. Like, it's a lot of education. As I said, we run training sessions for the harvest crews before they go in. And it's done in different places, it's done in different ways. Like, so for example, there's a Kiwi sanctuary down in the Hawke's Bay that had an area of, was recently, I think it was last year, was harvested. So obviously they're in a Kiwi sanctuary. We know there's Kiwi there and the numbers of Kiwi are quite high. What happened is before they began harvest, they put as many Kiwi as they could on transmitter. And then the logging crew were taught to what we call beep the birds. So every morning as part of their pre-start ritual, I think it was the crew boss in this instance, the crew manager would go out and he would use a telemetry set to just sweep the area they were going to be working in that day and just see if there was any Kiwi present in that area. If there weren't any Kiwi present, they were good to go. They could carry on their work plans and harvest that area. If there was Kiwi present, they had a couple of options. They could get a Kiwi handler out who was pretty much on call. She would go out, if necessary, move that Kiwi for the day while they harvested that area. Or the logging crew would change their plan for the day and they would have a plan B. So they would go to another area that was had no Kiwi in it and harvest that for the day. So there's lots of options. It was managed really well. There was no injuries, fatalities, anything like that. And like we're talking a really high population of Kiwi in that block. One day they turned up on the skid ready for work. Just as it was getting light, they saw a Kiwi scurry across the road and head onto their skid site and hide under one of their log piles. So they knew, we need someone to come and move that Kiwi. So they couldn't start work. They waited until a Kiwi handler came and moved that Kiwi, and then they got into their work day after that. So yeah, that's just an example of how it can be managed.
Kiwi are funny in how they behave and how they sometimes are still awake. Just when the sun comes up, where you actually think they've gone to bed and then they surprise you.
Yeah.
So say we harvested our forest successfully and kept the Kiwi safe. Do we know how clear felling impacts Kiwi, knowing that that wouldn't happen in a protective native forest?
That's a good question, because what we're currently doing, we're just getting it started, but we're currently undertaking a research project. It's titled The Effects of Modern Day Harvesting Techniques on Kiwi Populations in Commercial Forests. And part of the research project that we're undertaking is to monitor the Kiwi for 6 months post-harvest, to just to see exactly that, how they utilize the cutover, which is the area that's been logged. So that's going to be really interesting for us to see how that happens and what they do. Do they actually move out of the area? How soon do they move back in? What does it do? Obviously, the land is a lot more exposed now. There's not a pine forest growing on it. All those sorts of questions and variables. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting to find out. The last sort of research like that was done back in the early 80s, I think, in Waitangi. And the reason we're trying to do it again is because harvesting techniques have changed so much in that time. Like in the 80s, to fall a tree, it would have been a couple of guys on chainsaws walking through the forest, manually cutting down trees. They're on the ground. They're observing what's going around them. They're probably seeing Kiwi and other things like that as they work their way during the day, things like that. When it comes to actually pulling the logs to the skids, there would be guys manually hooking up the trees with wire ropes. So there was always guys on the ground. But most harvesting crews now have just about no one on the ground. The trees are cut down by 30-ton machines. So the guys sort of operating that machine is well removed from what's going on the forest floor. Generally, there's no people hooking up the logs to be extracted to the skid. That's quite often done now with grapples. So there's hardly anyone on the ground. And a lot of logging crews, there may be one person on the ground out of 10 people, I suppose. The rest of them are all in machines. And that guy that's on the ground isn't actually out in the forest. He's on the skid site usually just doing a QC check on the product that the crew's producing. That's why we're doing this research project, I guess, just to see how things are working with these new techniques as far as Kiwi are concerned.
Yeah, that's a pretty major change.
Yeah, it's massive.
And for the forestry crew, like, it's like night and day between how you'd operate on your day-to-day.
Yeah, like I said, I spent 30 years in the forestry industry, like in harvesting crews, running harvesting crews and doing all those jobs. And yeah, when I started out, it was all grunt work, guys on the ground, hard physical work. And yeah, now it's changed to guys sitting in machines pretty much without any boots on the ground.
It might be too early to ask this, so tell me if so. But what are you trying to achieve with this research? Like, what do you have any thoughts on how these findings might impact how we mitigate Kiwi losses in forestry?
The overarching question that we have, is it better for us to spend money during or put money towards, say, increased predator control in a forest in areas where we know there are Kiwi and try and increase that population during the life cycle of the forest? So try and get the population to a big level over 25, 30 years instead of spending that money on mitigation at harvest time to save one or two Kiwi. I guess the thought is that if we can get the population to a good size, then possibly the odd casualty during harvest isn't as catastrophic. That's sort of one of the main questions we sort of want to answer. But as well as, like I said, finding out how quickly they reutilize those harvested areas, how they actually do react to the machines, you know, because obviously machinery in that is noisy, it rumbles the ground. You know, are Kiwi actually moving on while the area's been harvested, and how soon do they come back? All those sorts of questions.
I'm really curious to learn the answers that this research is going to bring. And also, I just want to say, with the predator control, the effects that can have from 5% survival chance, I think it's something like 65 with good predator control in place. Is that right?
Yeah. It's something like that. It doesn't go up to 100%, obviously, because there's lots of variables. But, you know, going from 5% to 60 or 65% is still a big increase, and it's going to have a huge effect, isn't it?
Yeah, I find it really interesting. Like, I'm not super involved on the ground in conservation, not as much as I'd like to be. And it's easy to look at a species like kiwi or any of our taonga species for that matter and think, yeah, the scientists have it figured out. The sector has it figured out. You know, we know how they behave, how they live, how they act, how they think. But really, like, so much of what could be known about our species is just unknown. And we might have anecdotes, we might have someone that's in the forest that can say this or that, but, you know, credible science, it takes resources, it takes time. And it's cool to see that you're doing this research and that you are creating bodies of knowledge that can be used, because it's so critical. But also, I think it's a bit less common than, at least I assume, from an outside perspective.
Yeah.
That's definitely the thing, especially kiwi being nocturnal, it's extra hard to kind of know what they're up to. So going forward, Craig, especially while we're waiting for this research to bring us some answers, what are the biggest challenges that kiwi face in pine forests?
A lot of the factors are the same as anywhere else. Like, the predator situation is a massive one, as we've talked about already. You know, mustelids, dogs and feral cats are probably their biggest threat. So, you know, that's why it's encouraging that a lot of forests are helping with predator control and do have reasonably strong dog management guidelines around who's allowed to take dogs into their forest and when and what areas and all those sorts of things. I guess there's not a lot more, apart from the obvious harvesting one, it's humans and the predators, you know.
Is there anything you think that we could do better?
More awareness for everyone around kiwi and where kiwi can live. You know, it's often surprising for people that kiwi do live in pine forests. If there's enough cover and enough food, they'll pretty much live anywhere. Like, they'll live on farmland if there's enough cover and enough food and they feel safe. So the perception that kiwi live in just native forest is not quite right.
Well, that brings us nicely to the next question. So far, what's been the response of the wider community to kiwi being in pine plantations? You mentioned awareness is something we could do better. Is the community aware that they're there? Or if they are aware, how have they evolved?
Generally, people are really surprised that they live in pine forests. Like I sort of touched on it before, but most people will assume that kiwi live just in native bush and that couldn't possibly live anywhere else. Last field days, we had an invitation from the Forest Owners Association to attend field days and do an exhibit in the forestry hub. And it was really interesting. Probably somewhere in the vicinity of 80% of people were surprised that Kiwi would live in pine forest, and that was a real eye-opener for them.
Yes, awareness is definitely the big one, eh? That's how it all starts. That's how people start their journey.
That's why we're doing this.
So how does having kiwi in those pine plantations and encouraging it as a habitat by doing your predator control, etc., how does that benefit the bigger picture of kiwi conservation nationwide?
It's 1.8 million hectares of potential kiwi habitat. I mean, it'd be nice to have 1.8 million hectares of pine forest that have kiwi in it. But I mean, even if we can just tap into a small percentage of that land, that's going to make a huge difference, especially the areas where we know there are already kiwi or there are kiwi in neighbouring properties, create buffer zones so those populations can continue to grow and spread. The good thing about a lot of the forest is that they've already got infrastructure in place like roading. So it makes predator control, deploying predator control and maintaining trap lines and monitoring kiwi where it's necessary. If you've got a road to where you want to go, it's a lot easier. It's a lot more efficient. And it's good. I think it's good engagement for the forest companies if they do it properly, if they get engagement from the community around their forests and where their forests are, then it's a win for both.
Absolutely. I find the roading point really interesting because if you're in really thick, dense native forest, especially if it's with big steep hills and slips and ropes, it's not always the most accessible. Being able to drive to the start of the trap line and then walk out there, having those roads, it just makes it so much easier, right?
Looking out the window and looking at the edge of Whangapā Forest from here, we are doing trapping up there at the moment, and probably 95% of those traps are on the roadside, so it makes for real easy accessibility and trapping and makes that job a lot easier, which has got to be a lot more efficient.
Yeah, so what are the main motivators for forestry companies to fund or help kiwi conservation?
I think you find there's a few different motivating factors. There's a couple of environmental accreditations that most forest companies strive to achieve. The main one being the FSC, which is the Forest Stewardship Council accreditation. It's an accreditation that forest companies desire so that they can get their products into certain markets, I guess is a very simple way of putting it. So it's an environmental accreditation. It basically shows that you're a responsible forest owner and that you doing your best environmentally. That's one motivator, but that's not the main motivator. I mean, I was working with a forest company last year whose main motivation to try and develop a kiwi project within their estates, what they were trying to achieve was to give their staff a feel-good project to work on because their staff had been under the pump. Once again, I go back to community engagement, you know, getting engagement from the community around your forest, where your forest is and that, getting the community involved in these projects, things like that. That's always a motivating factor. And of course, I guess there's a PR perspective too to it. You know, we're not trying to show that they are responsible kaitiaki of their forests, and it's not all doom and gloom, but they are thinking about what's going on in their space around biodiversity and those sorts of things in the environment.
I think it's important that we weave this tapestry of all the different approaches to conservation, and forestry is clearly a permanent part of that.
Thank you for sharing those insights with us. Can you please share one example where a forestry company used their resources to fund kiwi conservation successfully?
There is lots of really good examples. One that is, I guess, close to my heart a little bit is Summit Forests New Zealand Biodiversity Block in the Whangapā Forest, which is a forest that I spent a lot of my logging career working in. I think I spent probably around about 22 years in that forest. I think that's where I started my career. It was around about 2007 they developed this biodiversity block, which is basically between Kuawatunu and Coromandel. I guess part of the motivation was to meet some of the FSC accreditation standards, but it's been a real success. They contracted out the work to look after this biodiversity block to a Kiwi project called Project Kiwi, which is based in Kuawatunu and Waitaia. So Project Kiwi look after that biodiversity block under contract to Summit Forests New Zealand. So it provides income for a Kiwi project. Summit Forests have done such a great job that I think it was in 2023, not long after I started with Save the Kiwi, they released the 100th kiwi back into that block.
That's awesome.
I'm not sure how many they're up to now, but getting close to 120 kiwi. And I know you guys have been involved in a release up there. So
yeah, that was great.
Yeah, it's a really cool project. And it's a lot of what I talked about before. It's a lot about community engagement. Like, it's just one of those really cool projects where everyone's involved. We've done training with harvest crews around that have been harvesting around that biodiversity block area. And obviously it's working because the kiwi numbers are increasing. I mean, not just not just the ones that have been re-released back in there, but the population is naturally getting bigger as well. So, and what we're finding now too is that we're starting to see the dispersal from that area into the neighbouring catchments, neighbouring properties that are owned by other people. So we're seeing that natural dispersal just because of the sheer numbers in there. So yeah, I think that's a great example of what forest companies can do.
That's fantastic. That's a really cool success story.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. It's really cool. There's been a lot of people who've put in a lot of effort over the years to get it to that stage, and it's, you know, it's a credit to everyone that's been involved, as well as the forest company.
That's awesome. So with the resources, with the effort going into forestry and looking after Kiwi there, is there any risk of this work potentially resulting in less overall funding and attention going into native forests where there's a wider diversity of species?
No, I don't think that is a danger. A lot of the work that goes on in forests is to a large degree self-funded by the forest companies. So I don't see that as a danger.
So it's not like dock workers are off in forestry where they could be in native forest or other things like that.
Dock will assist where required with advice and things like that. They only spend money on public-owned conservation land. They don't work on private land as such.
So it's essentially net new habitat, net new funding, net new resources when forestry gets involved.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's them complementing what's already going on.
Yeah, that's right. It's not impeding on what's going on. Yeah, as you say, it's complementing, and it's something new beside what's already happening in native areas and stuff like that. Yeah.
That is pretty exciting, if you ask me anyway. So how do we balance the line of giving forestry companies credit where it's due without moving into that territory of potential greenwashing?
Yeah, and there is definitely that danger. I mean, the way we look at it through Save the Kiwi, I guess, is that we step into these spaces only if we know that the people that we're, or the companies or whatever that we're partnering with, are being open and honest and transparent about what they're wanting to achieve and why they're wanting to achieve it. Because obviously greenwashing does go on. We do a lot of due diligence. We don't partner with anyone that we think their intentions are coming from the wrong position, you know, or viewpoint.
And I don't think that potential greenwashing of this situation is any one person or one entity's responsibility. Like, yes, Save the Kiwi is careful. Yes, forestry companies need to be careful that they don't overstate the facts and speculate. Yes, as the public, we actually need to make sure that we don't stretch the facts and start telling people what goes into the, you know, area of porkies or lies. And so I think it's just, yeah, it's important to make sure that anything we say or do has bearing on reality. Would that be a fair assumption?
Yeah, I think so. And you're right. You're definitely right. Like, about the responsibility of the public to have a balanced view and get all the facts, not just grab the latest headline off the front page of the paper sort of deal or on the internet and run with that as that being the only fact sort of thing.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And not putting someone on a pedestal that's unfair to maintain as well.
Yeah, for sure.
So Save the Kiwi's vision is to take Kiwi from endangered to everywhere. Within the forestry and Kiwi space, what can you see success looking like in the future, in the, say, let's say 10 or 50 years?
In the 10-year frame, I keep saying there's a lot of forest companies doing great work already, but to have a few more of them on board with the Kiwi kaupapa would be amazing. Like, you know, to have 80 or 90% of the forest companies in New Zealand to be actively doing something towards protecting Kiwi in their estates. 50 years time, well, yeah, as you say, our kaupapa or our vision is to take Kiwi from endangered to everywhere. And I know our media manager coined the phrase, we won't rest till they're a pest. So I think that's a pretty cool thing. You know, if you had Kiwi running through your backyard, or every time you walked through a forest, there was Kiwi sign, or if you walked through the forest at night, you'd stumble over Kiwi all the time. That would be great. That would be amazing. But it may take longer than 50 years to get to that point.
Right. Yeah. I have this vision of, like, kids screaming to their mum, "Mum, when will the Kiwi stop calling? I'm trying to sleep."
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think there's places up north and places in New Zealand that is like that, but very, very rare, you know. But it's, you know, social media, you're seeing more and more videos popping up of people running into Kiwi in strange and wonderful places and ways. So it's starting to happen, but, you know, we've got a long way to go.
I've observed that as well, that there's more and more little gems popping up everywhere. And what Save the Kiwi and other groups are doing to protect Kiwi is certainly starting to show effects, which is amazing. I also think, yes, it's a long-term thing, but it's also a community thing. If we all work together, it's going to be a lot easier to achieve. So do you have any practical tips that you would like to share for how people can help nature?
I guess just getting involved, you know, volunteer to help. It doesn't even have to be a Kiwi group, you know, whatever conservation group is near you. Conservation runs on volunteers, you know, as you guys know. So yeah, get out and help. That's probably the biggest thing you can do. For me, it's getting outside, getting your boots dirty and your hands dirty, and get out and have a crack at it.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. I like it. So what does conservation mean to you, Craig?
For me, the biggest thing is like the people that you meet and the people that you get to rub shoulders with. Like our Save the Kiwi team is amazing. Really talented, interesting, funny bunch of people. It's not even like work. And then volunteers that you meet, you just meet some amazing people. You might not get paid much, but it's a really cool way to spend your life.
Yeah, I second that. And it's those connections that you make along the way that ultimately connect you back to the ecosystems and the species. And it's just, yeah, it's a real cool space to be part of.
So if you're thinking about pursuing a career in conservation and you're listening to this, well, you don't get paid in money, you get paid in fulfillment.
That's right. exactly right.
It's been really, really fascinating chatting with you, Craig. Just one last question is, if people are really interested in this, how can they find out more?
Our Save the Kiwi website has got an enormous amount of resource and information on it. So yeah, I think it's www.savethekiwi.nz. Yeah, anything you need to know about it, how to get involved, it's how to donate, it's all there on our website. So yeah, have a look at it and get involved.
It's just such an awesome kaupapa, Save the Kiwi, and it's been so eye-opening hearing what's happening in forestries.
Thank you for coming on.
Kia ora.
Cheers.